Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today, I wanted to take this opportunity for the fifth Thursday in a month, and that's the month of April, of course, to answer some of the questions that have come to me over the internet through emails or through the Facebook conversations you all are having. This seems like a great thing to do because the next month in May, the theme is form of teaching. And some of these conversations that I'm going to have with you cover a bit of what I call and what the system holds as form of teaching. Then we'll have four conversations in May about form of teaching and what that's how that's affected masters and how it's led them into more places in themselves to learn about themselves and to also take the next step of healing. I'm going to read you the emails or the questions as they were presented to me, but I'm also going to take out personal references and also some information that I don't feel is necessary to the question. This keeps the questions and the questioner a bit anonymous because I haven't been able to ask them if they would mind having their questions on the air. And also, I feel that it's not just their question. My experience is that whether we know it or not, there are people out there asking our questions to people so that the responses are in the space also and we can gain from those responses. I like being able to sit outside and I'm very fond of rocks. And I just had this picture in my mind of sitting with you underneath the trees in the shade, enjoying how different in temperature the air is from underneath the shade here from the bright sun. And I always find it very refreshing and very lovely. And just sitting around having a nice talk and somebody asks a question and I respond and then we have a discussion. So we're not going to get to have the discussion part necessarily, but perhaps you will. Either on Facebook or you're welcome, of course, to go to the website and write me an email. The first question. Phyllis, I was wondering about the hand symbol on the banner. Is it a symbol for Reiki? I saw a couple of symbols on a group vision quest type of thing several years ago, and I've often wondered when they would pop up again. Well, it's very interesting because when, of course, we were talking about symbols last month, it's a very interesting question because, of course, the hand through the millennia has been a symbol of many different things. Sometimes it's just a message, I was here. So the hand symbol on the banner is not, for me, wasn't meant to be a symbol. The woman who took the picture on the banner is from Cuernavaca, Mexico, and I was down there visiting, and we went to this wonderful artist's home outside of the city, and he did metal sculptures, among other things. And this was a part of a sculpture that he had, and it was hanging panels of metal. And it just seemed like a really appropriate thing to have on the banner. And so we took the photograph, and it happened to be the one that I loved the most. And so it was not something that I used because I felt like it was a symbol of Reiki, but I used it because it recalls to me the power of the hand. My grandmother used to say that to do Reiki, all you need is your hands. You don't need to travel with anything else. So whether you're giving treatments, or whether you're teaching, you don't need anything else but your hands. And that's always been a wonderful reminder to me that as people traveled around migrating in the old days, I mean the very old days, all they had was their hands. And sometimes when I'm practicing Reiki, I have this feeling that this was one of the first, if not the first, way of healing that mankind has had in their, you know, for themselves. And that the hands are something that I don't think that I ever appreciated nearly as much as I do now after having practiced Reiki all these years. I've been given lots of hand jewelry, like pins and necklaces and earrings, and it seems that the hands are back, not only because of Reiki, for sure, but because I feel that in this day and age where we're looking toward our ancestors for wisdom and for guidance in how to establish a kind of foundation for our lives in this great technological age, that hands become more and more important to us. And I feel that they bring us so much. So then what about those people who unfortunately don't have their hands? And can they do Reiki? This is another question that came up. And of course, there are those people who, for some reason or another in their life, have only one hand or they have no hands. And the masters who have initiated them have told wonderful stories of how creative these people are and how creative they have been in initiating them and also in teaching them. And it gives everybody more of an understanding of how flexible, in many ways, our bodies are, and how flexible our energy system is, that though hands are handy, as it were, they're not necessary to do Reiki, and they're not necessary to do a lot of things. We are able to take another part of our body and be able to work with that in the same way. And this is, for me, one of the miracle, another miracle of our body. We, you know, I think that I'm locked into a kind of routine that I have because I have a certain way of walking or I have a certain impediment in some other part of my body, but that's not necessarily true. It's just different. And that's one of the more wonderful lessons about Reiki, is that we learn, or I did, and certainly a lot of the people that I hang about with have learned, that through Reiki, our bodies are really wonderful miracles of life, and that they are able to function in many ways without having to have what is called the normal. So that brings us, of course, to the question of, well, what is healing? And perhaps we'll cover that at another time. The next question. I would love to receive a CD of Phyllis's radio shows to listen to them on my iPod. Thank you for your support. Well, this one is very easy. You can purchase a CD, and my understanding of the CDs is that they are in an MP3 format, and they contain 6 months of radio shows, and they have these friends of mine who have been wonderful supporters of the radio show have taken out, because before this particular formatting of my show, I was on Motivox, and there were commercials and commercial breaks and so on. So Bert has taken out all of that, and you can listen to the radio show without all of the interruptions. And so they go back to the very first radio shows, and go up to this time now, which is I'm approaching the completion of my third year on the radio. So if you'd like to purchase them, please send me an email with your request, and I will send it on to someone who will answer you back, either Bert or Renata, and then you can work out how to pay for them there. One of the things that's happening is that I'm constructing a new website that will be up on the same URL, usuishikiriohoreiki.com, and this hopefully will be up and running by August, and I'll have a shopping cart. But meanwhile, you can order it through Bert or Renata, and they will send them out to you. So that's wonderful. And that means that that little money that you will pay for the CDs will help support the ongoing shows, because, of course, broadcasting the shows and doing the technical support of the shows does cost some money. And at first, I was glad to do it because through Motivox, because it was a really wonderful learning experience for me, and I want to thank the Motivox staff and the producer, Randall Libero, for putting up with me and just teaching me a lot about what I'm doing. And that was great. And now I'm on my own, and the cost is a lot less, but still monetary support for these things will ensure their continuance in the future. And that's really great. And one of the things that I really want to do is to find a way to have better recording here at my home over the telephone, so that the telephone interviews from other countries can be more clear and the sound is better. So I'm having a lot of trouble with the telephone lines in South America. And so we're kind of, those people in South America that I'm working with are being able to help me in trying to find ways to access the South America community, because there's lots of richness there in their stories also. So that's part of the process of the radio shows. So I'm glad that you enjoy them, and please enjoy them and share them. It's my pleasure. The next question is, one of the questions that keeps coming up for me is, can we change the big picture with our second degree practice? I remember hearing the words, Reiki can help facilitate life. I heard a colleague say recently that what Reiki definitely helps with is to give us strength to cope better with what is going on in our life. I love this thought and have found it very helpful and supportive. I had another insight recently that Reiki can also help us to surrender and accept what's happening. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Well, this was an interesting series of questions for me, and I feel like I have to go back before this second degree to come to speak about my own understanding and my own experience, actually, of having had Reiki. For those of you who don't know it, I was initiated in first degree as a very young child. And my practice as a young child was basically to treat my grandmother when she came to visit. And I did that without much understanding of what I was doing. And I received second degree when I was 28, and I came home in quite a state. And my grandmother was there, and she initiated me in second degree and again said, you know, your homework is to treat me every day. And so I tried to do this, and sometimes I did, and sometimes I didn't. And she would call me once in a while and say, you haven't sent me Reiki for a while, I want you to start again. So I did. And then when I was 30, I got the call, literally, from my mother and my grandmother to travel with my grandmother, and I didn't realize that this also entailed becoming a master, and I didn't realize what that meant at all. So I was initiated as a master. I went out on the road with my grandmother and traveled with her, and she was 78 at the time. And was, you know, she wasn't having problems, but it was just nice for her to have a companion and to have Reiki treatments every night to help sustain her and just to have somebody to be with while she traveled. So I didn't really understand this. Of course, I do now because I've traveled a lot, and having a companion that you can trust and be, you know, candid with is really important sometimes. And I would imagine that as I get into my 70s, it will be even more important. But anyway, I went on this trip and I found out what Reiki was. I listened to her lectures and listened to the history for the first time, and she talked about what Reiki meant for her, and then I started to treat with her other people, and then we also taught classes. So I was kind of plunged into teaching Reiki a little bit like what I would imagine this image of throwing a child into the swimming pool and saying, swim. But I had my grandmother there, who was a great coach and a wonderful master, although sometimes, because I'm a bit rebellious, I didn't really like how she taught me. And I didn't realize at that moment that my saying yes to traveling with her and starting to practice Reiki, including self-treatments on myself and treatments on other people, would change my life, and it certainly has. And one of the stories that I remember very well in this trip, and the first stop was Puerto Rico. We were standing outside of the little hotel that we were staying in Puerto Rico, which I remember with great fondness, actually. It was on the beach. And we were waiting for the person who was coming to pick us up to go to another lecture. And he was late, and he was more than 10 minutes late, then more than 15 minutes late, then more than 20 minutes late, and I was really irritated. And I kept pacing back and forth, my grandmother sitting on the bench outside of the hotel very calmly. And I'm saying, we could just rent a car, and I could drive you wherever you need to go, and you could be there on time. And I was just getting myself really worked up, and she would say, just for today, do not worry. And I would say, well, this isn't worry. This is about getting you to places on time, you know, and I would argue with her. And then she would say, just for today, do not anger. And I thought, well, that's really easy for you to say, but I'm responsible to get you to places on time. Anyway, that was what I thought my responsibility was as her companion. So this conversation went on and on. And finally, she pulled out the big whopper, as I thought about it at that point, and said, honor your parents, teachers, and elders. And I thought to myself, well, okay. If you don't care about being on time, that's fine with me. And she said, we will be there in just the right time. So finally, this man came by, picked us up, drove us some minutes to the place where we were going. And just as we pulled into the parking lot, I noticed that there were quite a few cars there already, but there were also cars pulling up at the same time. And in fact, we got there just at the right time. So I was a little sheepish and a bit taken aback, actually, by this. And of course, my grandmother said, well, see, we got here just at the right time. You have to trust what's happening. And this was my first experience, actually, of the Reiki precepts as I know them. And I felt like a little bit like I had been beaten over the head with them. But it was her way of showing me that they were actually applicable to daily life and to these moments in our lives that, you know, it's out of our control. And that acceptance of the situation is a much better tactic than being angry or trying to change it or figuring out that you're wrong because I didn't rent a car, so I should have figured that out. So then I was wrong and I felt guilty and I felt responsible and I felt like I had let her down. And, you know, that was a lot of burden on me. But if I was able to accept it and just be with it, then all of that never occurred, would never occurred, have occurred. So I found her teaching and her teaching style to be very straightforward and definitely applicable to our daily life. And, you know, I could say, well, that was well and good for that particular situation because it wasn't so important. You know, it was just somebody picking us up and being late. And even if we had been late, if we had, you know, walked in and everybody sitting there for 10 minutes, it still would have been fine because my grandmother was the kind of person to come in and just take people's attention, and they respected her instantly and knew that she was going to talk about something that was really important in their lives. Some of them didn't agree, some of them never took Reiki, but that didn't matter. The respect was there. And I have found that in my life, this particular scenario in front of the hotel has been a great anchor for me to remember when I'm in a situation that I feel is hopeless, whether it's emotional, whether it's a kind of life situation where I feel trapped, I don't know what to do, that this process of working with the precepts throughout my life has made a huge difference. And of course, as I took and I started working with the second degree practice, that deepened my understanding of the way that Reiki could intervene. And what I mean by this is not to change the outer world, not to change what's really happening, but to change how I accept it. And in that change of, instead of fighting something or being resistant to something or even in denial of something, the acceptance allows a greater range of possibilities to occur. And my choice is much different. And I feel that the energy that moves through my life is able to move and choose different routes of movement if I'm accepting and open than when I'm putting up blockades or dams to divert the river and to hopefully change it, and then really different disasters occur, as we have found out, of course, in nature. So, yes, I think that having a second degree practice can facilitate life and does facilitate life, but also first degree does facilitate life, and also but having a series of Reiki treatments, for instance, over 4 days, 7 days, 2 weeks, 21 days, 3 months, that also facilitates life because Reiki is universal life energy. It comes to us either through treatment or through our own practice or both. And the invitation of having Reiki in our lives as this flow, like water, allows our very selves to be nurtured and allows movement to continue. And as many people have told me in the last few months, movement is life. And this is really true for me. Movement is life. And that I'm open to change, I'm open to whatever the river brings me. And sometimes it's challenging, but it's always an opportunity. The next question that follows that one is, I am sometimes asked, is self-treatment enough? I would like to hear your thoughts on it. I'm positive that it will help me support my students better. Self-treatment is definitely enough. You know, for me, the practice of Reiki is essentially for ourselves as students. It's not a healing technique that, though this is possible within the practice, it's not a healing technique only for others. It's first and foremost for ourselves. And, you know, there's this New Age saying, which I used to really choke on, that says something like, you can only facilitate and recognize in yourself, you can only facilitate and recognize in others what you have done for yourself. And though I've choked on this many times, especially in the 1980s when I was first starting to practice and teach Reiki, I have learned in the next 20 years that this is so true. If I want to love someone else in an authentic way, not through sentiment, not through conditional, not through I'm supposed to, but to love without limit, then I have to love myself without limit. And that's the part that's tough. So for me, self-treatment is where we began. It's not only enough, it is what is the basic. It's the foundation of every healing process that will come from you. And of course, many of you perhaps are shy about treating yourself or don't see any value in it. And I would like to just say that the value of self-treatment doesn't come tomorrow. It comes in 100 tomorrows. And I use that word 100 as a kind of poetic license. When I first started to do self-treatment, I thought, why am I doing this? I'm feeling nothing. Nothing is happening in my life. I'm still angry with my stepchildren. I still think so-and-so is just stupid, and my life isn't changing, and I really don't like parts of it, and so on. But it was really a reflection of myself. I didn't like parts of me, big parts of me, and I didn't see that they would ever change, and I felt helpless and hopeless about it. And, you know, over a period of years and through my Reiki practice, I came into contact with people who helped me see parts of myself that I couldn't see myself, my blind side, as we say. And the opening up of these pieces of me that were blind, like I didn't see and other people did see, that I was able to start accepting these parts of myself, and then eventually to not just accept them, like, okay, so they're hanging on me and I just have to bear them as a burden, but to actually love that part of myself. And I'm still working on it. I'm still working on it. Of course, we will work on it till the end of this lifetime anyway. But it's good to be able to treat yourself, to open yourself up to yourself, and to heal yourself each day, step by step, until in a few years you can look back and this question will not be there. It will be more like, I am so glad that I treated myself because it did more than I expected. The next question is, I've had a hard time discerning the attributes professed by some Reiki masters who wish to train me long distance using the telephone, email, or whatever means made available. Can you give me your opinion of Reiki training through correspondence? Well, a part of me wants to say that this is not something that I have experienced. It's not something that I practice. So I really don't know anything about it. And it's hard for me to have an opinion about something that I haven't actually experienced. And that is, for me, one response that I can give you. Another response comes from my own practice. And I will just say this from that perspective. And that is that through my own experience of oral tradition and through my own experience of teaching face-to-face in person, I feel that there is something special that happens, something that I would miss personally if I were to be trained or use something that's not face-to-face. So given that, I think that what is important to ascertain for yourself as a student or a prospective student is to decide what is important to you. I don't know. I mean, I assume that it works to some extent, and works is a very general term, because otherwise they wouldn't do it. I feel that all of us as Reiki masters who are out there, whatever our form of teaching is, and whatever our values are, and whatever our practice are doing this with essentially the same motivation. We want to extend ourselves to people. We want to learn from our experiences. We want to benefit humankind in some way. And so if they didn't feel like it had value, if they didn't feel like it worked, I'm sure that they wouldn't do it. But it's not my way. It's just, you know, my way is a different way. And it doesn't make any of us more right or wrong. In fact, one of the great lessons that I have learned in my practice of Reiki is there is no right and wrong. I have my own personal truth that comes from all the factors, all the events, all the people, all the conversations I've ever had in my life. And this truth shifts because I'm open to new perspectives and new understandings. So when you're a prospective student and you're looking to invite Reiki into your life, meaning the energy of Reiki, then just know that this invitation, this practice, is going to change your life. And how is it that you want to receive it? What is important to you? And what is important to you right at that moment? So some people have received Reiki through an email or whatever, or through the distance, I would say. And later on, say 2 or 3 years later, they've gone, well, I want something more. I want something different. I want something better. I want, I don't know, whatever the mind is. And my encouragement is to be really clear that in the moment that you chose, whatever you chose to do, whether it was to come to a class, whether it was to come to the email, whether it was to come to the internet, or to come to the telephone, that was your choice in that moment, and that was the way that you could accept Reiki at that moment, and that's fine. And that as a growing individual, as a developing individual, human beings are able and capable of taking their next step, whatever that is. So be really careful, listeners out there, when you are doing your next step, that you don't end up invalidating your earlier experiences or your earlier teachers because or your earlier masters, because they served you in that moment. And your best way to work with that is to accept them, to accept what they gave you, to accept the responsibility of your own practice, which is very important. None of this works without practice, without personal practice. And it's a sense of saying, okay, I've done it this way, so now I'm going to take my step and go to this master, or I'm going to go to this healing method, or I'm going to go to this meditation, or I'm going to go to this kind of way of healing. So just allow yourself the respect of where you were in the moment, where you are now, and where you are going in your horizon. So it's your decision. And it can't be a wrong decision. It's just your decision in that moment that's right for you. The next question is, are you teaching any first degree classes this year? I'm very interested in taking Reiki with you and wonder if that's possible. Well, it is possible, and I am teaching one or two classes this year. Because of my treatments and so on, I'm not doing any work until the very end of the year, and that's going to be in Russia. And my two first degree classes will be close to home, and they're places that I've already gone before. I offer first degree classes to people who have not ever been initiated in Reiki. And this goes along with the sharing that I did for the last question. It's my wish to honor all initiations and all teaching of Reiki because, well, I mean, it's kind of a selfish reason, but I want my practice to be honored. You know, we all have different places to come to Reiki from, and we all also have different needs. So at the beginning, when there were not lots of masters in the world, and I knew all the masters that there were, actually, personally, you know, we started changing the practice immediately. And through the years, I've come back to my grandmother's practice as much as possible, because I feel like it was the way that Reiki was given to me, and it's the way that I want to pass it on to my students. And why should I change it? I mean, I don't have the connection energetically, nor the understanding that has come down through this lineage, Mikao Usui, Shijiro Hayashi, and my grandmother, Hawaii Otakata. And I'm a student myself, so the best thing I can do is to maintain my practice. Not in a way that I feel is restricting me, but in a way that's teaching me. So I assume that if you've been taught, especially if you're masters in another system or another form of practice, that you would do the same thing, and that sometimes people are inspired by different things and different factors to teach differently, sometimes without asking for money for classes, sometimes teaching in one day, sometimes teaching over the telephone, for instance. And those are things that I would not do, and that's okay for me. And I absolutely defend your right to practice how you want. It's very important for me, because I just see that in this world of comparison and always needing to point the finger at somebody to blame them or to have something be wrong, my experience is that life and Reiki bring me exactly what I need. And in response to things and places that I've been, and in response to my own life path. And so the master that it came to me was my grandmother. The master that came to you might be somebody else, but that was a person that was to lead you to Reiki. And I honor that and respect that. So I would not initiate somebody again if I knew that they were initiated by somebody else and felt that they had received Reiki, but it wasn't right. That's not something that I can do. I want to be respectful of everybody. And at the same time, I have, for any student who wants to come, gatherings and events where I do teach in the sense of talking about my experiences in Reiki, like we do over the radio show. So, sorry, that was my phone, and I don't know how to turn it off, so hopefully it won't ring again. Where was I? Oh, so if you would like to, I don't know, have contact with me, the radio show is a great place to do that. And if you have a chance sometime when I'm traveling again and doing and offering events, that you're also welcome to come. Anyone, any Reiki student is welcome to come and partake in these. So this is my answer to the question, and I'm really always excited to teach a first degree class, which is another little bit I wanted to say, because it brings me back to my own beginnings, and that's really important. There's another question about initiation, and this one comes from the Caribbean. And I know that this actually has been asked of me quite a few times from people in different countries in the world. Hello, Phyllis Furumoto. I have heard of your name, and I would like to be initiated as a Reiki Grandmaster, as I intend to enlarge my healing center here, bringing positive energy and a lot of love into everyone's heart. And my written response to him was, there is no initiation for a Reiki Grandmaster, in my opinion. This is an inherited position from the lineage bearer Grandmaster before you. There is no more power nor respect in being a Grandmaster. Be content with who you are, and the healing center will evolve. Power is not about being over people. Power is about being a human being. When I first was recognized as the grandmaster of the system and to be my grandmother's successor even more clearly, I was shocked. I was 30 years old, or 31, and I knew very little about Reiki. I had only had not even 2 years' experience in actually practicing Reiki, and many of the masters that she initiated had been practicing years and years longer than I had. They were also older, and I was always taught to respect my elders. And I was floundering, like I didn't know what the duties, in quotes, was for a grandmaster. And so I struggled with this from a really different place. I felt like I had been given power where it wasn't deserved, and I had been given shoes to fill that I could never fill. And, you know, and that was true. A new student, a relatively new student, to fill my grandmother's shoes who had been practicing Reiki for over 40 years, basically day and night, 24/7 we call it, 24 hours, 7 days a week, is something that I just couldn't even fathom. So I was really, we could call in resistance to this particular position for many years. And I only became peaceful and quiet about it again when I was willing to accept it. When I was willing to accept that people recognized me as her successor, that people wanted to have somebody who was a spokesperson for the system, and that I accepted that this was a part of my path in my life, that somehow this gift was, that it was a gift, number one, that was a big one, and number two, that it was a gift that I needed to accept in order to be able to hold it in a way that really benefited not only myself, but the system, and to respect my grandmother's teaching. I think grandmaster for some other people means master of masters, and I thought that when I initiated the masters that I have initiated, that I would be a master of masters, and I suppose on some literal sense I am, but I have to say that the initiation of masters has humbled me, has smoothed out a lot of my very rough edges, has allowed me to see myself in many different reflections, and has shown me that my first relationship with the system and with Reiki as the energy is as a student. And the more that I practice as a master, the stronger my studentship becomes. So the initiations are not, for me, a place of gaining power. They are a place of gaining self-responsibility. And you can choose that. You don't need initiations to choose that. As my grandmother said, first degree is all you need. And I see that in my students, I see that in her students, I see that in students everywhere in the world. And if you're led to the next initiation and the next initiation, it's because something's calling you. And that calling can't be denied. So if your calling is to be a grandmaster, then it will happen. And there are some very deep understandings of how this comes about that I can't actually articulate because I don't know them myself. Well, we're almost finished with the show, and I've answered most of the questions. I haven't had a chance to answer all of them, but I think that we've covered a lot of ground, and a lot of them have been about the form of teaching, about how this practice that I hold is disseminated to first degree and second degree students and what the parameters of that are. This is not to hold out away from people the possibility to come into this practice, but to say that there are other possibilities. And oftentimes we think that first degree is the only way to come into a practice, and that's not true for me. So if that's the case, then please write me of your experience, and we can get together, and I'm open to sharing my experiences and my life with Reiki with anyone, actually, who's willing to listen. So, the very last email that I'd like to read obviously comes from Australia and touched me very deeply because, well, Australia is a very, very special place, and as most places are in the world. But I think that in my travels, and I haven't been to Africa, and I feel that Africa would also be like this for me, that the place where I felt so foreign and so out of touch was when I went to Japan, which is really crazy, of course, because I'm Japanese. And I've eaten Japanese food all my life and was raised in a fairly Japanese environment. But being there was very, very different because I feel like the cultural values are extremely different from the ones in the United States that I've been raised with. And the same is true for when I went to Australia, that the way that society works there is different, and I found it sometimes very confusing. But I got used to it, and I have very dear and lovely friends and companions in Australia. But I also fell in love with the land there. The way the Aboriginals hold it is very much the same, and in some way very different from their teachings, come in a different way from the other Native Americans that I've been with. And of course, their message is always the same. And I'd like to read this email that I received from Australia and wrap this show up. There have been many thought-provoking, absorbing conversations over these shows, but today with Yoli was unbelievable for me. In my earlier life, I had the privilege of working in the Australian outback with the Aborigines. It was an amazing time, but what was fascinating today was the description of the old brain. And drawing in the dust, the medicine doctor drew the first symbol in the dust, and he said, as he drew it, "You are born, you live, and you die." This fascinated me at the time, and as he drew it, I knew I had seen it before. Over 20 years later, during a second degree, when I was given the first symbol, I found this connection to be astonishing. It still thrills me to this day. No words can describe the sense of oneness that it gave me. Also, it was while working with the Aborigines that I first became aware of this feeling of connection and oneness. In Bruce Chatwin's book, Songlines, there is a beautiful line saying, "You cannot travel on the path before you have become the path itself." I'll repeat it. You cannot travel on the path before you have become the path itself. This has come to me so many times over these last weeks. I wanted to share this with you. For me, Reiki is that path, and when all the goals are achieved, if there is ever such a thing, we do Reiki in the same way that as the yogi chops wood. I hope this makes some sense, Phyllis. You are an amazing path, and may your healing continue. I feel that this sharing really says it all for me. And it's not just about the symbols. It's about our touching ourselves with our hands with no conditions. it's about accepting our life as it is, as it's been given to us, and doing the best we can with it. It's about understanding deep within us and knowing that we are one and that there is connection everywhere, to the rock, to the tree, to the birds, to the animals, and especially to one another. This is, for me, the path of Reiki. And it doesn't have to be a path, but I feel like if we surrender to it as students, then it becomes our path and can give us the most amazing experiences, can influence our lives, and benefit humankind one by one. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.